that. But Kevin, Emma Coleman, and I, with the rest of the WEPC team, had the opportunity to go to South Sudan last summer. And there were so many little snapshots I'd love to give you, but one, I want to give you one snapshot that prompted me to wish that we could have Michael and Karen come and just share what they've learned about community and mission in their time serving Christ in Africa. So our family went for about a week, and then after about a week, the rest of the WEPC team was going to come and join us. And so you have to drive out to this airstrip to greet the plane, and it's kind of a big event because they're, you know, there's just not a ton going on there like that. So when this plane comes in, you know, sort of people gather. And the team is, the World Harvest team is just very welcoming. So when we flew in, when my family and I arrived, when we flew in, we saw all these people on the ground waving to us literally as we're in the plane. It was very moving. I partly because I was so excited we had lived. And also, I felt really welcomed. And so that week later, my family was going to be part of welcoming the WEPC team. So there are not a lot of vehicles, and there are a lot of people, and there are these really bumpy roads. And so Michael's got this, what is this, like a Jeep that you have, or what is it called?
Land Cruiser.
A Land Cruiser. And it's got seats that go, you know, face the front, and then it's got seats that go to the side, and then it's got, anyway, so we get in, so I get in the in that car, Karen is driving, and we're just gonna go greet the team, and I think Karen and I are going to greet the team. Well, then we start driving, and someone else says, wait, and someone else on the team is like, are you guys going to greet the team? Yeah, I wanna go, okay, so stop the car, that person gets in. Then we start driving down the road, and Karen says, oh, we've gotta swing by so-and-so's house and get them, so we stop, and we get this other person. And then she says, now we need to go get Heidi and Scott in town. They want to go. So, okay. So we've now already been in the car like 20 minutes. So then we drive to Heidi and Scott's. And Heidi and Scott, she's honking the horn. They're not coming out. So then Melissa says, oh, I'll just go look for Heidi and Scott. So at this point, there's enough people in the car that most of the people have to get out for Melissa to get out to go look for Heidi and Scott. So we get out, Melissa gets out, she goes and looks for Heidi and Scott, she finds them. They were late because someone had come by that needed, had hurt themselves, and they were trying to help them. And so they're, and everyone says this, like, this is, oh yeah, so-and-so came by and he got hurt and that's why we were late. And Karen's like, okay, well, I'm sure we'll make it. I mean, hopefully we'll make it. So they all get in. Then we're driving, and there are two folks from Mundri that are walking along the road, and Melissa says, oh, that's so-and-so and so-and-so that I teach. Let's see if they need a ride. So Karen stops, and then they get in. And it's like almost like the Partridge Family. I don't know. Like, the van is just, like, crowded with people. And I was just so struck with, you know, in the States, honestly, I would have been like, we need to get to the plane. This thought that you make room for people as you go was just so not American. It just really, it was very stunning to me how this in the whole spirit of us, we have room for you, we have time for you, we have room for you, we have time for you. So that's a little bit of the spirit of why we wanted to invite Michael and Karen to be here and talk to us. Like I said, so many of us were taken with the community there and what we tasted of that and how it dovetails with your mission and how those two seem to unfold together. So I wondered if you guys could just take a minute and just sort of speak big picture about how you've experienced community and mission sort of together.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of talking about what our team does, and it's a great way of talking about what you do here in West End. And I think that's what we're trying to do here tonight, is draw some parallels between what we've experienced as a missional community in Mundri and what God's done through you here in Richmond. I lecture on community development at the Bible College, so if I start lecturing now, you can cut me off. But in good African form, when we start a class, the first things we do is define our terms. So what's community? What is development? We can spend about the first three lectures just on what is community. But I think community is any group of people with a shared identity, shared values, shared goals, some way of making decisions together. And honestly, we're all part of a lot of separate, sometimes overlapping communities. You've got your family, your workplace, maybe a sports team, a club you're a part of. So, you know, we're all parts of different communities. And the question is, sort of, how do we define ourselves as community? But also, how do we not become ingrown in communities? When we make our walls too strong, when it becomes us against them, we call that tribalism. And but in a missional community, you're motivated by something bigger than yourself. So you do, you come together, you're known and loved, but it's not all about you. It's pushing out beyond you to something bigger.
We should have just, when you say something, will you tell us what your, you actually have a tagline for what you say your mission is in Mundry. Will you say what that is?
Yeah, it's partnering, and that's a key word, but partnering with the local church and community to bring the hope of the gospel to Mundry through healing, development, and discipleship. But it's that partnership that's key. We as a team, we're in a World Harvest Mission team, and we're very intentional about being strong as a community, loving each other well. But we don't pretend that it's all about us and we come in with all the answers. We really try to work in partnership, in dialogue with the larger community and with our church partners. So, yeah, communities always have to have semi-permeable walls, I say, so that we're moving, we're sharing energy and ideas with the community of which we're a part.
Thank you. So you talked about this idea of circles, that we have these relationships that sort of move out. So let's start sort of at the center. Let's talk about the small circles. And I'm just curious, what have been some of the most impactful experiences or truths that have come home in that thought of just starting right where you are, right with the people that are around you?
I would say, when I think of my smallest circle, I mean, it's definitely my family, but very much my family is usually engulfed within team, which changes from time to time based on where we're located. But in South Sudan, it's more recently been us five Massos and some single men and women, some of them who actually we had served with together in Uganda. And I would say this same had applied to our time in Uganda, that the gift of that small team in a very difficult situation has, I think that's been the hugest thing that God has used to change my life and shape my life and show me what love is, what honesty is, what living together really looks like. The way we live, we have little homes where different people sleep, and we have this one big house that we all eat in. So it's, and what ends up happening on the field is that for us, our team becomes everything. It becomes our church. It becomes our doctor's office. It becomes our counseling office. It's our Bible study. It's our family. It's our restaurant. It's everything. I mean, so if you, I mean, and it's our colleagues. So it's different than if you have a little tiff at work and you come home and you can get some space and think it through. It's not that way on our mission field. If you have a tiff with somebody in on the team, you're having dinner with them that night. Things are like, you can't get away. It forces you to deal with your own heart and the ways that you may or may not have been the guilty partner, but probably what's been festering in your heart since then are things you need to deal with. And it has taught me a lot about forgiveness and grace and being just on the receiving end of forgiveness. And that's been really, really powerful in my life. And it's been, it's just been a gift.
So this would be a good place just so they can get a picture. You know, one of the things that also struck us while we were there is you have to love people so concretely that it takes love out of the theoretical and the forgiveness out of the theoretical, and it becomes very actual. So can you give us a couple examples of what it feels like, even in the small things, to have to depend on, be humbled, love, serve, forgive?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it always melts down to the kitchen. How are you keeping the kitchen? How long does it take for the dishes to get washed and into the dish drainer and back on the shelf again? That always tends to be the part where, I know you got some 20-something young guys, you got some women in their 30s, you got families, you got a whole bunch going, and little kids, you got things going on, and that tends to be the place where people are gonna irritate each other the most.
We discussed that. Nausea.
At some point, all the guys are rolling their eyes. Are they still talking about the dish drain?
But what we have to learn too is that you do have to be sensitive to what is important to other people too. And when you do live together, you got to talk these things through. And pretty soon, we have a pretty thick rule book for how the kitchen is to be operated. But we've learned those rules aren't, it's not about legalism, it's not about making rules for their own sake, but it's listening to each other and learning and finding ways that we can get along and be sensitive to each other.
Tell us about a time when that's been really hard on people, the fact that you have to submit to the greater good of the team.
It was hard in the heat of the dry season when it gets over 100 degrees every day. Some people on the team place a high value on drinking cold water. But we run off of solar electricity, so we only have a limited amount of power every day. And if we use up all the power, there's no lights at night. So when you got 12 people, us engineers figured all this out, each one drinking about a liter and a half of water, cooling that from 100 degrees down to 50 degrees, you know, we did the math, and our solar system just wasn't going to be up to that. So we had to lay out some more rules about how much cold water each person's going to have. So, you know, again, that bothers some people more than others. Just one of those examples where every little detail of our life is complicated and we have to work it all through together as a group of 12 people. So, it can be tough. It can be challenging to be sure, but again, with some grace and forgiveness, and certainly not without conflict, but God's been gracious to us, help us work through those things.
Yeah. And for us, I felt like the team is kind of like the church in this little petri dish. Like, everything is just all small, condensed, and often festering, but it's just a place where you can't choose who's with you there. You're not, it's like family. You have who you have. God's brought you together. You got to make this thing work. And I've appreciated that because it doesn't allow you to run. It doesn't allow you to ignore what's going on. And I am not a confrontational person. I will run at any opportunity I have. And it's been beautiful to see some people who are willing to press in. And it shows me like that people are willing to love me more than the peaceful relationship that they have. And that gives me confidence, that gives me security in our relationship, that allows me to work with them and risk going out in uncomfortable and awkward situations in the larger community, knowing that somebody has your back and somebody is willing to say what's uncomfortable and put themselves at risk for you. So I've really appreciated that.
Yeah, when we were talking last week, you said something about how that's how trust gets built. And I thought that was so interesting that even in having a hard conversation with someone on the team ultimately builds your sense of trust together.
Yeah, I'd say that's the strongest way to build trust. I mean, for me, I can often wonder, is this person mad at me? Have I annoyed them? Like, always have these little questions in the back of my mind, but the more people are willing to lay themselves out there and be honest and truthful in relationships, then yeah, it's just way more secure.
Yeah. Similarly, we talked a little bit about the fact that your family has impacted the team and the team has impacted your family. I mean, the fact that you are five and then you're on a team of sometimes singles, sometimes married with no kids, back in Uganda with other families. But can you talk a little bit about how you think family has impacted your team and the team has impacted your family?
I would say team is one of the greatest gifts for our family. I believe that our children have been uniquely in this situation where they have mature, godly men and women surrounding them who are, of course, way cooler than mom and dad, who are fun, who are willing to pour into them and love on them, just fabulous role models. And I think the way the fact that we have been able to have that has just been a blessing for them and has shaped mm-hmm. who they are. I believe it's. I've also heard from the people on our team that they're happy that there's a family. They love kids. They love that they're not just kind of out there. It's like, yeah, they're not just in college with all these people their same age. And plus, we, as I don't know, because we're married, we end up sometimes having that parental role or like the nurturing role. So it kind of goes back and forth the way that we've been able to care for one another. I would say definitely the thing that's always been missing is the older generation. Mm-hmm. We've been missing the older wisdom coming into our group. Mm-hmm. But it's been, I like how we've been blessing each other that way.
So you're
especially
looking
in a place that's unfamiliar to us.
In a place that's unfamiliar to you?
Yeah, I would say like say South Sudan. I mean, we end up like clumping together because there's parts of who we are that are alike. In the same way, I would imagine that a different immigrant communities around here find security in people who get it, who know where they've come from, who know there's just a set cultural mm-hmm. thing that's true, that's the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it has been hard not having other families, not having older people around, because we do love our team, but there is something about a healthy community that's intergenerational, and it's great in the community to learn from your elders. I know in discipleship we talk about having someone mentoring you, someone older than you, someone wiser, and then younger people you're pouring into. So I think that's healthy. We do experience that to a large degree with our Sudanese community. But just thinking about here at West End, it's great to see people of all ages, and that is a really healthy thing.
So we thought you were here to recruit a doctor, but actually you're here to recruit a grandparent or two.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. We're ready.
And we'll take note. Okay, so let's move out a little bit, and let's talk about your team in the Mundri community. How do you see the team impacting the community in Mundri, and how do you see the community of Mundri impacting the team for the sake of the gospel?
I would say what's most striking is the way that the Sudanese community has come around us. From the first day we landed, we didn't have a house. I did not know how to cook. I don't know how to cook on charcoal. We were completely helpless. But the Sudanese community just came around us. They helped us figure out where to live, how to live. I can't tell you how long they fed me until we really had our own like space.
So they fed your family?
They would bring food to you? They literally cooked for us 3 meals a day for a while, and then we eventually got a house, and Michael could put some kind of kitchen in it. And then even back then, there wasn't a lot of food. The markets were real slim because people were just beginning to return after the war. So it was literal slim pickings. I can remember just one of the first night I made dinner, I just laid in bed, cried after that. Like, I can't keep this up because it's just, I remember washing dishes in the dark in a little pot of water that we had carried in from outside. And it was difficult. And things have really changed since then. So much of the community has come back. A lot of people, a lot of South Sudanese have seen this is a safe place now. We can resettle. We can bring our families. We can make a new life here. And that's been good. So
And as we said, the older community in South Sudan, they are the strong, faithful men and women. They have actually been pouring into our team so beautifully. A lot of people do feel like they have those older grandmothers mm-hmm. in their lives mm-hmm. as they go visit them. So we're grateful for that.
It is all about partnership, and it's all about mission. And so the mission pushes us out, so we don't just become how do we live together as a team, but how do we, as a team, interact with the community. So, and again, it is a real two-way street. There's so much we've learned. In fact, there's something I want us to improve in is sharing with you the things we are learning from our Sudanese friends. Because there's just so much to learn from these people who've been through suffering, who've been through hardship, who have such a deep, deep faith and a vibrant love for Jesus. They've encouraged me when I get discouraged. And you see that old man there on the right? His name's Laverick. Very wise old gentleman who I'd get discouraged. We're running out of money. We don't have the people. Is this project going to work? And he'd say, well, what are you worried about? You think it depends on you and your money? This is God's work, and he's going to do it. So, yeah, there's just so many ways they've ministered to us, loved us, helped us learn the language, just help us learn our way around or make decisions or how do we handle this cross-cultural situation. And the church has been so patient with us, so such a blessing to us.
Can you talk a little bit about what you... how the gospel has to continually refresh your energy to keep kind of not becoming tribal even there and to keep sort of moving out, keep loving the people that are you're with, but also continue moving out. How does that happen?
It happens in fellowship and worship with our local friends, but we're also very, diligent or intentional about making sure people are resting, taking a Sabbath day, getting time to pray. It's been brought to my attention by our mission director that Jesus says, come to me, all you who are thirsty. And if we're not drinking deeply of Jesus, we don't have anything to share with the community. And if our mission statement is bringing the hope of the gospel, that gospel has to be really real to us, meaningful to us. So as we're in prayer, as we're connected to Christ, as we're repenting and forgiving and just sensing the work of the Holy Spirit, then that's what's going to overflow out to the community.
I think for me, I also kind of pick it up on my own, and I do a lot of things on my own strength, but then once I kind of come to the end of myself, I think that's when I'm reminded of the gospel again, that it's that I need Christ for forgiveness as well as motivation and love and for vision and to kind of move back out again, because I can just kind of twirl myself inwardly. So,
Can you guys say anything about how you have become more more aware that the aspects of the gospel, the fact that we're sinners with no hope apart from Christ, and the fact that the grace is so free, has that changed for you over the years, your understanding of those things?
I don't know. I think when we first came to Africa, I had this idea that when I got on the plane, I'd be a different person by the time I land, because I was officially a missionary. And that all of a sudden I wouldn't be selfish. I wouldn't be as irritated. I'd kind of be a little kind of just floating around doing kind things everywhere. But that was not true. My heart was just as sad and pitiful as it was before. So it was, again, I have to remain attached to the vine. And I think that it's just been a continuation of that throughout the years. The only reason we're here is because we are being transformed, and so,
I guess I've learned a lot, a lot that it starts at home, for one thing. I want to change the world. I want to win a Nobel Prize for solving poverty in Africa. But do I love my own wife? Or am I patient with the person sitting right in front of me? It's a lot easier to love the poor in general than to love an actual individual who's coming to you. You gotta understand their situation and show compassion and be patient. And so yeah, that's come home a lot more deeply. And I'm an American, I'm male, I'm an engineer. My idolatry is to think that I can fix things and build things and be effective. And so it's just been humbling to realize change comes slowly. I'm not really in control. And can I just be faithful to do what I can do to steward the resources I have, but not to be hung up about the outcomes or basing my identity in what I can fix and what I can do.
Yeah, I think that's key for me as well, thinking about just realizing that the needs of this world are so deep and so incredible, and we can come up with some really great programs and really serve some people well, but the depth of the need, it's unending. And I think that's one thing I've grown in learning. I guess I thought I would have accomplished more, but it's not so much about accomplishing more. It's about doing the next faithful thing, honoring God with the next thing that you do. And earlier this summer, I was encouraged by a quote by Mother Teresa, just about her just giving adding like one drop to the ocean. And that's what it feels like to me. The ocean of what can happen or needs to happen is so huge, and our effort is the smallest drop. But our faithfulness to do that is what God's calling us to do in response, and to love Him and to honor Him, but trust that the bigger needs of full redemption of this planet and of reaching individual hearts, that's all Him. And I'm learning how to surrender that and to be a small cog in His huge plan. And hopefully it'll continue to transform my prayers to give it to Him. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Do you guys have any last things you want us to know about your family, your situation, how we can partner with you? Is there anything else you want us to know?
I would say I'm excited to be here tonight because we get to look at the growth of West End over the 20 years. Since your beginnings here, and to see that we're a part of that is exciting. And I've got to say, your commitment to us and to our ministry is different than any relationship that we've had in another church. And every church is different. Every church's commitment to each work is unique. But I'm just grateful to celebrate the neat connection that God has brought between us, between your hearts and South Sudan, between who you are and the Massos. And it's, I'm just enjoying it and just so grateful for the relationships and the hope and the commitment. So I just want to say thank you, and we're grateful to God for you.